The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Welcome to the podcast. It's Pat and Stu in for Glenn today, who's on Thanksgiving break. We'll be here all week. By the way, I want to remind you after that to, when we come back next week, the whole show with Glenn, it will be here, and we're going to be in Florida. If you're going to go on tour, we're doing a stage show on, go to glennbeck.com/tour, see all the dates, but it's Tampa and Orlando, November 30th and December 1st, is that it? Okay, so join us, please, go to glennbeck.com/tour, we would love to see you there. Today on the podcast, we did a bunch of things. We talked about the Chipotle controversy, where a group of African Americans came in, said that they were victims of racism, and the real story behind that one is a little more complicated. And Chipotle is now fighting off a major controversy as it relates to that. We went on as well to talk about the presidential candidates for 2020. Who is exciting the debates? Who's exciting the left as far as the Democratic primary goes? I'm ready for this primary, aren't you?
It's going to be fun. About it. Yeah, it's going to be
fun. They're just going to be beating the hell out of each other every day.
Yes.
That's going to be fun.
I think they're going to have more than 17 candidates like the Republicans did in 2016.
I think you're right. I think they're going to go for it because this is your time.
Like, it's going to be 25 or 30 at first.
They all are convinced that Trump is easy to beat.
Yep.
And they're all convinced that Hillary just blew it. And so it'll be interesting to see how many you get, because I think you will get in the area of that. And we went through all their like odds, the betting odds of who's going to win. It's pretty interesting. Also, the Obamas, though, becoming billionaires, Pat.
Yeah, they're well on the way with massive book deals and the Netflix deal that they have, which some people have said it's $100 million. And then they've got, you know, their speeches where they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars a piece at each event.
So, incredible.
Yeah, they're doing okay. Doing okay.
That and a lot more on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Monday, November 19th.
Patriot Mobile. We love Patriot Mobile. Pat and I have been talking about Patriot Mobile for a long time. They are, that's who I use for phone service. They have great service. You don't have to sacrifice anything. But the great thing is you do get to get the benefits of helping conservative values. You want to talk about getting Supreme Court justices in. You want to talk about all the things that are important to you when it comes to your political leanings. That's why Patriot Mobile was created. They saw that left-wing companies were sending money to left-wing causes. You can do the opposite here. Right now, they have unlimited plans starting as low as $20 a month. Why wait? Visit them online at patriotmobile.com/blaze. The promo code is FREELINE, or call them at 1-800-PATRIOT. Patriot Mobile, come join the family. 1-800-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/blaze. So there's a viral video in which a fine group of African-American gentlemen decided to go into Chipotle. And they tagged their video with this quote: "Can a group of young, well-established African Americans get a bite to eat after a long workout session, Chipotle?"
I'm going to say the answer is yes.
I'm going to say yes too.
Yeah, you probably can.
Fairly common, I would say, for people of every race to go to Chipotle.
I've seen African Americans in a Chipotle being served as I was there.
Is that possible?
It is possible. It's happened.
I'm a skeptic of your claim.
Are you
a skeptic of your claim?
It is pretty outrageous.
Now, Chipotle, or as Al Sharpton calls it, Chipotle, is a restaurant that serves everybody. Because, you know, pretty much every restaurant in America will do this. But Chipotle really does it, right? Like, they've got thousands of locations. The idea that they would not serve African Americans would be a questionable
policy choice. Seems like a bad business model.
Yes.
We'll serve everybody but black people.
Yeah, we're not going to serve 14% of the population. We just don't want that money.
Yeah.
We don't want it. So what they said, and it's on the video. Several black people saying to the white manager, "Hey, you know, we want our food. Why won't you give us our food?" And she says, "Look, if you guys want your food, you're going to have to pay first, okay? Because you know how when you go through a Chipotle line, you order the food and you go through the whole process, and then at the end, you usually pay."
Yeah.
And in the video, she says something like, "Look, we've seen you guys here before, okay?" Again, like, look at this racist. This racist manager who just said, "What, have you seen their kind here before? Is that what you're saying?" So this goes viral.
Or right? Is she talking about these specific people she's actually
seeing? That's an interesting question you ask there, Pat.
Yeah.
It's one you'd think almost everyone would ask immediately, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But no, it was all about because she didn't like black people. So this goes through the process where it goes viral and Chipotle picks it up. They tweet,
we would like to say that this is not the way we should treat people in our blah, 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 blah.
They call her up. They call they get in touch with the African-American customers. And they say, hey, you know, what happened? They tell them what happened. They didn't serve us because we were black. And they fire the manager.
Of course. Sure.
Now,
why look into it in any meaningful way?
No.
You just accept the story at face value, right? Because every single time we believe survivors, and they're obviously survivors mm-hmm. of intense discrimination.
Well, they did have a statement that came out, Pat.
Okay.
Regarding what happened at the St. Paul restaurant, the manager thought these gentlemen were the same customers from Tuesday night who weren't able to pay for their meal. Wait a minute. So they asked the manager, and the manager said, those guys were here before and didn't pay last time. That's why we need their money up front.
Okay.
Listen to, regardless, this is not how we treat our customers. And as a result, the manager at the restaurant has been fired.
That's how they don't treat their customers as customers?
Right.
Is that what they're saying?
People who need to pay?
You don't have to pay.
Right.
Interesting information for everybody going to Chipotle today.
It's an easy way to get a free meal, apparently. The manager has been fired. They did say, because the Daily Caller said, you know, we should look at this this guy's social media feed. See what he's been tweeting about.
Okay.
Here are some, you want some select quotes? It's not a dine and dash. We're just borrowing the food for a couple of hours.
Oh, my gosh.
We never have money. You know me. I'm here every day. Mm-hmm. Is what they were saying here. They said they were all being stereotyped. However, the quotes from the Twitter feed of... oh, God. Let's see. They're all over the fact. In fact, several, three, four times... They tweeted about going, one time even going to the restaurant, saying they are going to dine and dash, and then saying on social media, if they didn't allow it, they would say it was racism.
Which they did.
Which they did.
And it cost somebody their job.
And it worked.
Wow.
Now, apparently, they were aware of these. They said they were
aware of the tweets?
Yes. They
said, they fired the manager anyway?
They said they had no choice but to take his word for it. Now, after this already blew up, because now they've gone through one wave of negativity on social media.
Yeah.
Then they decided to fire the manager. Now the reverse, of course, has happened, where everyone's saying, hey, what the hell? This makes no sense. You fired this poor woman because she was obviously doing something that was protecting the company, not trashing it by any means.
Yeah.
She has now been she was offered her job back.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, there's some sanity prevailing.
Kind of. Would you take it?
No.
I wouldn't.
But unless I, deeply needed a job and didn't have confidence I could get another one somewhere, then I guess you go back, right?
I guess, and I wonder, because people will Google her name, and what will they see? Her as a racist, stopping black people from eating at Chipotle. Another tweet from the person here who did the scam. I think Chipotle is catching up to us. Should we change locations? He actually was publicly admitting that they were going there to steal food, and they still fired the manager.
It's just unbelievable.
Pat, we've been through this for so long, and conservative media, I think, was the first in this firing line, right? Where where three or four activists would come up with a little scam to email a company a couple hundred times and act like different people. And then the company would freak out because they don't get complaint calls typically. It's just an invention of the social media email world where all of a sudden it was a lot easier to do that. People didn't want to take the time to write 500 letters. But when you can just kind of change wording and, get some interns to send stuff out, it was easy. And these companies would get intimidated and they'd freak out and they'd pull their advertising. It would, theoretically hurt these companies. And now it's just all the time. I remember when it first started, look, it sucks right now because these companies, it's something new to them, getting all these complaint letters, getting all this attention, and eventually they're going to figure out that this
is
the same
new
12 people. It's not new anymore, and they still haven't figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
These companies never enter these things with a skeptical eye. Every single time there's someone who writes, I don't like being waited on by a Croatian on their receipt. Like, oh, well, we do not stand for anti-Croatian bias here at a Bob's Diner and Sausage Pig in a Blanket Factory. That place will fire everybody on staff until, mm-hmm. like, 3 days later they realize mm-hmm. that the person wasn't Croatian or the guy wrote it on his own receipt or whatever the heck the situation is. How many times have we seen these hoaxes? It's always the same thing. People don't yep. write negative messages on receipts. Can we just accept that as part of life? What? Like, it's just not something
They'll
you
always
do.
Be found out. And yes. they know, I mean, even if they had the propensity to do that, they probably wouldn't, because you know you're going to be seen. They've got information of your credit card
yeah.
for one thing, and I don't want them screwing with that. You're going to have negative publicity about you. You're probably going to get fired from your job if you actually do it. It doesn't work out for anybody. And here's another thing: almost nobody feels that way. Like, oh, I'm not going to give you a tip because you're a person of color. That doesn't happen as a rule in America.
No, it doesn't.
And we've seen that over and over and over and over again where these are hoaxes. We just had a story last week. I think we talked about it when Glenn was here and I was, doing my little promotion thing. That there was a person at a university who wrote a hate message on their door. Like,
yep.
Hey, this is where a black person lives. Don't knock on the door or whatever. And it happened at the same university where just a few months ago, somebody spray painted the N-word all over their car. In both cases, it was the person who claimed to be the victim that wrote the note.
Of course.
Or spray painted their car.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens all the time.
All the time. This is something, I mean, we can be helpful here, Pat. When you're trying to do a hate crime hoax on yourself, writing it on a receipt is not a good way to go.
No.
Because the person knows that you have their information with a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
So they wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
They might be, like, there are people who are racist, right? They just don't do that.
But even racists just don't do that.
Right, like, David Duke doesn't show up. He's not showing up at restaurants being like, by the way, I was not appreciative of the African-American server. Like, that's not what they do.
No.
They march with torches. That's what they do. They march with torches in Charlottesville. That's mm-hmm. their role.
Mm-hmm.
And they say Jews will not replace us. Many times, in case you didn't hear it, they just keep repeating it. That's the approach.
Well, and don't pretend like that's not something you're worried about, too. How many times have you said that Jews will not replace you here? I mean, if I've heard that once from you.
I'm very concerned about Jews replacing us, Pat. We've said this
so
many times.
So weird. What a weird chant that was, too. Jews will not replace us. Well, when are you at your job in the country?
I like the Jews are probably like, well, we see you marching with torches. We will not replace you there. That's all you. So no, we will not replace you in the racist march. That won't happen. It's a strange way to go.
It really is.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
The Obamas, you'll be pleased to know, I think, that the Obamas are well on their way to becoming a billionaire brand.
Oh, good.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes,
it
finally.
It is so gratifying that their public service can lead to massive, untold wealth. That is so great that they've parlayed a senator role and a presidential role into a billion-dollar business. Fantastic.
This is how it's supposed to work. Our founders
decided.
This is
exactly how it's supposed to work.
You're supposed to go. You serve mm-hmm. for a few years.
Yes.
Then you get out. You become a billionaire.
Right.
That is.
Because you deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
By golly. The launch of Michelle Obama's cross-country book tour for her memoir, Becoming. Now, you've been to one of these rallies, right, for Michelle?
For Michelle Obama and her new book, Becoming?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
I've flown to several locations where she's been just so I could be there in person.
I'm a Michelle head myself. So wherever she goes, I will fly into the city. Or sometimes I rent a bus and just follow around the country. And Have you seen her arms?
Oh, my gosh. Her arms
That's
are
That's the main reason I do it. They're fabulous.
Magnificent arms.
You ever see them live? I mean, her arms live.
Oh.
If you've never experienced it, folks, it's worth the front row ticket.
It is.
I mean, yeah, you're going to pay $35,000
yeah.
to sit in that front row. But you'll get to see those
arms.
It's worth
it.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Her arms are that good.
In addition to, get this, she got a $65 million book advance. Now, how many books would you have to sell in order for the company to even break even on that?
$65
million? $65
million. Wow. I mean, you're probably in the area of 10 to 15 million books, and there's no way she's going to sell.
Is there any way? I mean, she might sell a tenth of that? I don't know. But books just don't sell that well anymore, which is why you don't see books a million anymore or...
I still have books a million. They have some. I mean,
are they? I thought they went completely out of business.
No, I think you're thinking of Borders.
Borders did.
Yeah, Borders did.
Yeah. So in addition to the $65 million advance and an estimated $50 million deal with Netflix, which I actually read a few weeks ago was more like $100 million.
Why on earth would you want Michelle Obama designing content for Netflix?
They've got no experience in that. I guess just lending their name to it.
Yeah, and their relationships probably, right?
Yeah.
Because they'll probably be able to pull on all their celebrity friends. But I mean, this is a great example of exactly what the founders didn't see public service as. This isn't even related to what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's one thing to like be able to go and raise money for something that you've worked on or you have expertise in.
Mm-hmm.
They have no expertise in programming content for Netflix.
None. And it's a huge deal. And plus, you know, that's not even to mention the amount of money they're getting for their appearances. Michelle, she was first lady, but she's getting $225,000 per appearance. Barack Obama is getting $400,000 per appearance.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, I do think.
I do think at a certain point you've made enough money,
right?
I mean, wait, what was that?
It was.
I think at a certain point you've made enough money.
Oh, but not this much.
Not this.
No.
They're not at that point yet. And I don't. It's going to be interesting to see if he ever decides they are at that point where I've made enough money, and every dollar I receive now will go directly to charities. I'd like to see that happen. Or to the U.S. government because, you know, he doesn't pay enough in taxes.
Well, it's the only charity that does any good, as far as I'm concerned, is the U.S. government. The U.S. government is, this is what we all think. You know, send your money there. Let them deal with it because they do a great job.
They're already worth, estimated by Forbes, over $135 million since they left office. $135 million.
Unreal.
And they're on the way to becoming a billion-dollar brand. I mean... The hypocrisy of this income inequality, which they clearly don't believe in. They don't care how much more money they make than anybody else. And they're not, do you think they're going to turn over the proceeds of their fabulous paychecks to anybody but themselves? No, they're not.
They'll give a certain amount out to Democratic candidates.
Sure.
Do you think there's any chance Michelle runs?
I do think there's a chance.
There's a chance. It's not a non-zero situation.
No,
I think
not.
There's a possibility because, and I think if she ran, I think she'd have a great chance of winning it.
Do some damage
of that nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Relief Factor. Relief Factor, of course, is something that is, I know Glenn has had a great experience with because, you know, I used to hear him whining all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in pain. Which is like, suck it up. Get over it. We don't care.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make it worse. We'd say things like that to him, and that didn't always heal him. Relief Factor has done a lot to make him feel a lot better about his pain situation. You think about it, too. Like, you go through your whole life. You know, and going to work every day and doing all the things that you do. And at the end, you want to be able to relax a little bit and be able to play with your grandkids, play with your kids, like, you know, maybe do some physical work in your yard. And you can't deal with that because of all the pain that you acquired as you were working your whole life. Don't deal with that anymore. Get the three-week quick start. Give Relief Factor a try. It's like $1 a day. It's, 70% of the people who order the three-week quick start go on to order more and more. It says a lot. Get your life back with Relief Factor. If you want a drug-free and natural way to ease your pain, go to relieffactor.com. Relieffactor.com. Glenn loves this. I think you'll like it too. It's relieffactor.com. I want to make a case to the left that they should stop worrying about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Again, she could have left. She could have saved you a lot of hassle. by naming, getting someone named who you actually liked. You could have had your Merrick Garland if Ruth Bader Ginsburg would have stepped down all those years ago. But why not? Why not Sotomayor? Sonia Sotomayor is, by most measures, slightly more liberal than Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which shows you how awful she is as a Supreme Court justice. And by the way, there's several Republicans voted for her to get her in.
Many.
It was not a, I think she got 61 votes or 60 or 61.
Yeah, it was 61-34 or something.
Yeah.
And there were some abstentions or people who weren't there at the time.
Yeah, the Kavanaugh thing is not the norm.
No.
You know, we keep thinking about, like, oh, these things are so contentious.
Well, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg was 97-3.
97-3. You know, really, it only happens to Republicans. Bork, Clarence Thomas, and Brett Kavanaugh being the three you'd think of right off the top of your head. Not to mention, you know, Harriet Myers didn't even get to that point. Bush had a month of Harriet Myers talk and then it was gone. You know, with Democrats, typically what happens is a bunch of Republicans cross the aisle and they get through pretty easily. Now Merrick Garland, they keep bringing up as an exception to that, which is, I can understand them being frustrated about that process. We talked about it at the time, but it's not the norm where this is usually going to be as contentious as Kavanaugh. But Sotomayor came out in an interview this weekend talking about Brett Kavanaugh. And actually, it kind of gives you, a little bit of hope. I mean, Sotomayor has not been a disappointment when it comes to liberals. But listen to this as far as her relationship and acceptance of Brett Kavanaugh.
I just wanted to spend a couple of minutes
with David Axelrod.
The moment that you think the court is in now. I know you guys are sort of cloistered, but you're not cocooned. We came through this sort of acrimonious process of confirmation.
Did it relate to alcohol?
I like
you
beer.
Haven't asked for that.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
Do you like beer, Senator, or not? What do you like to drink?
Next.
What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open.
How do you view it from the inside? I mean, how does the court and family, community adjust to those moments?
I'm going to steal a line from one of my colleagues, a story, actually, not a line. And it was Justice Thomas, who tells me that when he first came to the court, another justice approached him and said, "I judge you by what you do here. Welcome." Mm-hmm. And I repeated that story to Justice Kavanaugh when I first greeted him here. Now, I've known him, I've known of his work, but when you're charged with working together for most of the remainder of your life, you have to create a relationship. The nine of us are now a family. And we're a family with each of us our own burdens and our own obligations to others. But this is our work family. And it's just as important as our personal family. We probably spend more time with each other than most justices spend who have spouses with their spouses.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Home title lock. If you have ever had a situation where you get some weird stuff in the mail, you're worried about all these threats to your money and your identity, that's part of it. But you need to start considering a new threat. It's called home title fraud. It's one of the fastest growing crimes in America. And I discovered this a few months ago and started reading up on it. It's a scary thing. Yeah, because then you can just take control of your mortgage and your title and then start borrowing money against your equity. That's your money. And you get stuck with a bill. It's a real hole in the system. And there's really no way to fill it right now unless you trust local governments to be able to decipher these things well. They don't. So you need to go with Home Title Lock. Home Title Lock puts a virtual barrier around your home's title and mortgage for pennies a day. As soon as they detect any tampering, they can just get it out of there for you. And if you are worried about whether you're a victim of this already, they have a $100 search, but this is absolutely free if you go to HomeTitleLock.com and sign up now. It's your biggest investment. It's your nest egg. It's everything you've worked for probably your entire life. If you're like most people, HomeTitleLock.com is the place to go to protect it. HomeTitleLock.com.
There's this Harvard professor, archaeologist and historian, who just did a study on what was the worst year in human history.
I like this.
Now, many people would probably think It's 2018.
Of course.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the year, it's any year in which Trump had anything to say about what goes on
right.
in a country or the world. It was actually the year 536 AD, where he found bubonic plague, widespread famine, war, flu pandemics, and a year and a half long fog that they couldn't explain that kept the Northern Hemisphere in darkness. For 18 months, it was like dusk, day and night. Sun, wow. They couldn't see the sun for a year and a half. And meanwhile, on the surface of the planet, people are dying from plagues, from wow. famine, from drought. There was snowfall in China. Europe, the Middle East, and parts of Asia plunged into that year and a half of solid darkness by this. And at the time, they didn't have any idea what was going on. Why is this happening to us? And then you find out, first of all, they also had a continental scale crop failure. So all of Europe had crop failure, and so did Asia. Hmm. And then the disease kicked in. And apparently a lot of it was triggered by a cataclysmic Icelandic eruption. So there's your global warming that caused the earth, the volcano, and then the drought
yeah.
and the severe famine
mm-hmm.
and the weird, mysterious weirding of the weather that included a dense fog that put them in darkness. And, you know, millions of people died. And they said that they didn't recover. The earth didn't recover from this disaster for 100 years. Not until 636 AD.
Wow.
Did they start to get back to where they once were.
And your life expectancy at this point is what, 20?
Probably.
22, which is probably yeah. about 21 years more than you wanted it to be.
Probably.
I was like, living through these times, can you imagine?
But I mean, so there was no capitalism then. There was no America yeah. then. And there was no help or no. hope for these people.
No way of turning it around.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing. How would you? And you're talking about, 10% of your life?
Right.
Probably at this point. You're just living in a fog. That's
yes.
That's a real rough one. It's interesting. They had another study that came out, and we talk about this all the time because the left loves to say this. And you know what? I will say the right likes to say it a lot, too, which is that wages have stagnated.
Yeah, geez.
And, you know, you look at this and there's a lot of reasons why it's not true. Wages haven't really stagnated. There are different things that have happened as far as, like, you know, more employers now spend more on healthcare. And so, like, the money coming to you has gone up quite a bit. It's just that progressives have pushed for policies in which your employer makes your decisions for what you spend your money on instead of you. You know, like, oh, well, you should have all these things covered because you're too dumb and might not buy those things if you're not forced to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what progressives do on both sides. Because Republicans love that stat, too. They say, look, you know, it's a good way of saying when someone else's control, well, look, yeah, you know, things might seem like it's good now, but, like, wages have stagnated since 1989.
Yeah, all the jobs that are being created are bad ones.
Right, exactly. Now, of course, it's not true for a bunch of reasons, but why would it even matter, right? Like, let's just say this world happens where all wages stagnate and you make the same amount of money for the rest of your life, but everything continually gets cheaper, so you have more money to spend on other things. That's a good world, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does a number mm-hmm. matter? The number doesn't matter. It's what can you do with a number?
Right.
So there's a new study out about consumption poverty. Now, this is different than income, right? So income is how much money do you have? And you start, you know, there's a scale of how much leads to poverty. But what about things that are actually important? What are you spending money on? All of these are down by 20% to 80%, between 20 and 80% since 1989. Now, where wages are relatively, they go up and down a little bit, but they haven't gone up per se for people in the poverty regions, the poorest 20% of Americans. But do you have a dishwasher in your house? That's dropped by between 20 and 80%. A clothes dryer. Again, this is people who don't have one. So more people.
So
have
the amount
them
of people who mm-hmm. don't have them has dropped.
Yes. Sorry
okay.
for I missed a statement.
Yes.
That. Yes. Do you not have a clothes washer? That has dropped between 20 and 80% if you don't have one. Do you have no air conditioning? Those houses. Again, this is among the 20% poorest families in America.
Yeah.
No air conditioning has dropped. Large section of peeling paint on their home has dropped. How about a water leak from outside the house? Dropped. Water leak from inside the house? Dropped. All of them between 20 and 80% again since about 1990. So even poor, and this, and we've gone through the stats before of, you know, air conditioning, TV, microwave,
phones, even mobile phones, cell phones,
multiple cars, cell phones, tablets. These are all things that
cable
now hit
TV.
50, 60, 90, almost 100% of our poor.
Things that will be luxury items to the rest of the world.
It's items that you couldn't even buy if you were the richest person in the world in 30 years ago. A tablet, you couldn't buy it if you were Bill Gates. Right, Bill Gates had to go through a whole thing of building an entire company, get that rich, and then even after that, he couldn't invent one better than somebody else. I mean, that is incredible.
It is.
We never look at it that way, though. We never do.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program, and we really want to thank you for listening.
I think tomorrow night is a it's an official holiday in the Bergier family, is it not?
It is.
Since Creed 2 is being released?
Yes. Anytime a Rocky movie comes out, it's an official holiday in my family. And actually,
you have tickets?
I bought tickets multiple weeks ago. Yes.
Multiple weeks ago.
Creed 2, very excited about it. In fact, the return of Ivan Drago.
That's amazing.
Yes. Very exciting.
Because Creed is fighting his son, right?
Yes. And now, if you remember, of course.
Which is super likely to happen.
Oh, this is, the whole series is very likely to happen. Unfortunately, as you remember, of course, Apollo Creed
died
in the ring
at the hands of Dolph Lundgren, right?
Ivan Drago,
right? Ivan
the
Drago,
Soviet fighter,
yes.
Who was. There are rumors of steroid abuse in that particular story, but
there were strong rumors,
including footage. it also, that movie, if you remember, of course, ended the Cold War. People don't, of course, remember that. Credit to Reagan and Thatcher, whatever.
Right.
It was all
Rocky
Sly Stallone.
It was Rocky IV.
It was, and so they're bringing this one back, which I'm pretty excited about. Hopefully, it doesn't start a new Cold War. Maybe this is what happens. Like, it brings us and Russia back together. I don't know.
But Dolph Lundgren, the original Ivan Drago, is actually in this movie, right?
He's in this one.
I heard something the other day, and I thought, that can't be true. It's got to be one of those urban legends. They said Dolph Lundgren has an IQ of 160.
He's like super smart.
160! Yeah. That's by far genius category. That's 140, I think, or 143 or something is genius. 160 that's like Einstein smart.
He's very, very smart. And it was weird because his role as Ivan Drago was obviously a big, strong guy who punches a lot and says very little.
Yeah, and he's dumb. Dopey.
Yeah, kind of like
just a killing machine, really.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because he was not, as you might have detected from the movie, he had not done a lot of acting previous to this, to this role.
Did detect that.
But if you see in the movie Rocky IV, when he comes out of the floor in Vegas and it's James Brown singing Living in America and all that, like his reaction, he says, is like, it was completely legitimate. I was like, I had no idea. He's just standing in the middle of the ring, not moving, because he was terrified. Like, he had never seen anything like this. It's pretty amazing. And now he's back for this one. I'm pretty excited about it.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah, so that's going to be a big one. Did you see the new Harry Potter thing?
Yeah, Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald. It was good. I liked it.
Just related, or is it part of the same story?
No, it's the same story. It's like a prequel to the Harry Potter stuff.
So they went through this whole Harry Potter thing. This is the last book ever, we promise.
Yep.
And then
she just started back over on the series.
How could you resist?
Because you can't.
It's a money printing machine.
Well, she sold 450 to 500 million copies of the books, and then the movies did, I don't know, $1.5 billion or $2 billion. So why would you stop that money printing machine?
It just sounds dumb, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Do you think someone came to her and said, just so you're aware, this is dumb. Don't stop writing them.
Keep doing it. People like it.
Yeah, people like it.
So that made $62 million over the weekend, but it cost $200 million to make, so...
Yeah, but you have the whole... First of all, one of the biggest weeks of movie viewing is coming
week,
up, right? And this one and Christmas are huge weeks. And this whole season, I mean, it'll do well. That'll do well.
Have you taken the kids to The Grinch, the new one?
They went yesterday while I was watching the Eagles lose by 611 points.
Oh, wow.
But they did like it a lot. They did like it quite a bit.
And then Bohemian Rhapsody, still third. And that's made $127 million so far. And it only cost $52 million to make. Queen is... I don't know. There's something interesting and unique about their music, because, you know, people like me who grew up with it love it, but people who, like my kids, love it too. Queen just seems like universally loved musically, and it's interesting that Bohemian Rhapsody continues to be so popular among virtually all age groups.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
They were talking about the 2020 presidential election and some potential Democrat candidates are being thrown out there to oppose Trump.
Yeah.
And kind of gauging the audience reaction to each of them.
So this is kind of interesting, because you can look at it and you say a lot of people are passionate about this candidate or this candidate. I found this to be really interesting. 538 did a podcast in front of a live audience as a review of the election. And as you're listening to it, you find this is definitely a Democratic audience, which is not a huge surprise. I think they did it in New York.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a Democratic audience. And you could say someone so engaged in politics that they're thinking about this and wanting to go see a 538 podcast about the midterms, mm-hmm. You're going to be an activist, right? Like, this is where the energy is probably in the Democratic Party. This is a non-scientific study, by the way. But I was fascinated at the reactions to the candidates. They do a 2020 draft. So these three experts, Claire Malone, Nate Silver, and Micah Cohen, do a draft where they, like, it's like a fantasy football draft where they draft candidates. You're trying to pick the one who actually gets the nomination.
Okay.
So they go through and they're doing their picks. Let me give you this one first. This one was, I thought, pretty surprising. The first pick overall in the draft. And just the main thing here is just to listen to the crowd reactions as their names are said. Listen. This is the first one. First pick in the overall draft, by the way, was Claire Malone picking Elizabeth Warren. Okay, we're going to have this clip here in a second for you. It is, I don't know. First of all, Claire Malone, she may be very smart, but you don't pick Elizabeth Warren first in the draft. I mean, that's a terrible pick.
No, you don't.
I mean, but I wouldn't say it was out of the mainstream of thought, right? I think a lot of people would put her.
Yeah.
We have the odds on this, the percentage chance of winning. She's in the top three or four. Right now, Kamala Harris is the number one.
You got to be kidding.
Yeah,
me.
Number one, Kamala Harris. Number two, Joe Biden. Number three, Bernie Sanders.
Is Hillary listed in this?
Four, Elizabeth Warren. What's that?
Is Hillary listed?
Hillary, that's a good question. Is Hillary even listed? I don't see Hillary.
There are many
here
who think she's
going to run again.
Definitely running in 2020.
I just can't believe it. All right, here's the first pick of the draft. Listen to this.
So, Claire, who is the number one overall choice in our 2020 Democratic primary draft?
I am sticking with my last first round choice of Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren. Okay, there it is. They don't like that.
Boy, they sure didn't.
They did not like that.
That's all you got.
Yeah, that's it.
I didn't hear a single applause.
Right? Now Elizabeth Warren was the energy.
Yeah.
Remember? I really think
she was the big, a cool hip pick in 2016 to run, and she of course, never ran, but everybody seemingly wanted her to.
Everyone wanted to. She was the pick, right?
Yeah.
And what's interesting is I think this whole Native American thing really backfired on her in a huge way.
Yeah.
And that I think it was very bad for Elizabeth Warren's future in politics, but very good for the Democratic Party that she did that, because they saw how she handles these tough moments and she can't handle these tough moments.
Right.
She's not good at this. She's going. Yeah. I mean, if there was one candidate, if you wanted Donald Trump to win and one of these top candidates to go against, I would pick Elizabeth Warren. Trump would not be able to keep up with certain people who can deal with the pressure of a Donald Trump.
Yeah, she's not one of them.
I keep saying Joe Biden would actually be a good counterweight to Trump, because he can get in there, he can fight, he's good at that sort of thing. I'm not saying he'd be a good president, he wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd be a much tougher matchup for Trump than an Elizabeth Warren.
Definitely.
So next up is Nate Silver. He's picking his second pick is Joe Biden, and listen to the reaction.
Nate Silver, your choice.
I'm trying to figure out if I should be tactical or not here, but I'm gonna be the honest pick and I'm gonna go with Joe Biden.
Joe Biden. Tactical would have been thinking that Biden is going to fall to the second
Micah
round.
Having said that he wouldn't pick Biden, I'd get him at five.
Okay,
right?
So, and do you remember, I don't know the historical trends here, but you've been...
There seems to be more kind of laughter than applause or cheering there.
Not much of anything, right? Uh-uh. Like a little laughter, and it's kind of just acknowledging everyone knows he's one of the front runners.
Yeah.
Now, the next one here is the third pick of the draft. Listen.
My first pick is going to be...
His first round pick.
Kamala Harris.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty strong.
My next
pretty strong reaction. Two in a row here.
Klobuchar.
Amy Klobuchar. So those
where
two in a row.
Where are they doing this?
This is it's a recording of their podcast, but very Democratic audience.
Like, but do you know what city they're?
I think it's New York.
Did you say New York?
Yeah, I think it's New York.
How did they even? Most people don't even know who Amy Klobuchar is.
Well, that's why, though. Again, these are political nerds, right? The type of people who would pick candidates. Like when we came out with 17 candidates at the beginning of the Republican convention, most of America had no idea who half of them were. We
True.
All knew who all of them were, and we'd already gone through all of their policies and talked about it a million times. So those two there, Kamala Harris and Klobuchar, back to back with really strong reactions in comparison.
Strong reactions.
Yeah. Next up is Nate Silver's pick.
A member newly elevated to the top tier is Beto O'Rourke.
Okay. Oh my God. Bad pick.
Why?
All right, what's up? I mean, right there, you see another big reaction. They go back and forth and argue about that one a little
bit. That's probably the biggest reaction so far.
Yeah, I would say one is there. Two is probably Klobuchar, I would say.
Yep.
Three, Kamala Harris. Biden and Warren. I mean, Warren was not just nothing, but really negative. I mean, it was a negative. Oh, gosh. It was almost a groan from the crowd. next pick was Claire Malone's next one.
Claire, you're up.
So I think there's only a couple people left of the top tier. And I'm going to go with Kirsten Gillibrand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moderate.
Yeah.
Okay, you can stop. But moderate
Yeah, but better
there.
Than Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden, probably.
Right. Probably the fourth best out of there so far. Mm-hmm. Now, here's one I would have expected to have a huge reaction. Nate Silver's next pick.
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders. God. There he is. Okay. So
not much.
That's underwhelming.
Very underwhelming. Right? I mean, you know... You would think Bernie Sanders, again, was the energy, not necessarily from the political class, right, where you'd say this person can win, but the energy of the activist, the energy of this is who I want to win, is this
it
guy who's admitting he's a socialist.
It reminds me of the way I felt about Rick Santorum the first time compared to Rick Santorum the second time. I was really excited about him, then not so much the second time. And maybe that's how they feel about Sanders.
That's an interesting point. Like he's already been there. Because you can get the same policies from Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
And she's new, and she's
Beto
female,
O'Rourke.
And young. Beto O'Rourke, who's younger, you know, a good campaigner. You can get those things out of other candidates.
Yes.
And no longer do you need that first run to justify a second run. Right, like we've seen this with Barack Obama. I mean, Donald Trump obviously had kind of flirted with a run for a long time, but you know, you don't have to lose. Like, I would think the same thing would happen to Cruz in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like if Cruz tries to run again in 2024, people are going to find somebody else who has a similar policy set and rather pick him. We've already done this with Cruz. People get bored too fast now. It's not like the days. I mean, what would have happened with Reagan? If Reagan had lost that election like he did back in 76, would he have been able to come back in 80? I don't know.
I don't know.
I think a lot of people would have been like, we're bored with him. He's old and we've already dealt with that.
Yeah.
I think people get sick of things too fast now.
I think so.
Next up, and the rest of these are, there's a couple funny ones. Could we skip to Claire Malone's next pick? Because Claire Malone picks Cory Booker.
the last of the top tier, which is Cory Booker.
Okay.
And
completing your
nope, we're not interested. Thank you.
I don't know how much analysis we kept of that one, but their analysis was very much like trying to justify a way to think that he's in the top tier. He's not in the top tier.
He's not.
He is terrible. He's terrible. He's a terrible candidate. It's not going to work for Corey, unfortunately.
No.
But fortunately for all of us. So there you go. Some of the picks coming up for 2020.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.